That is High Feeling, the opening track from Destiny Hotel, the second album in 2 years from Nashville's meticulous roots rock band, Cordovas. I call them meticulous because, as we discovered in a 2018 full band interview for The String here on WMOT, Cordovas rehearse and arrange their tightly constructed songs on a daily basis. The 10 songs on the new project clock in at just 29 minutes all told, but they're densely packed with musical and thematic ideas, with sparkling vocal harmonies and healing thoughts. As you'll hear in my conversation with founder and lead vocalist Joe Firstman, these guys have been using the lockdown of 2020 to practice and play every day, as well as reading and talking. And that's what Joe told me when I asked them if there was anything that this year of focus and looking inward has made possible that wasn't so easy before. Here's Joe Firstman.
I think the most important advancement for Cordovas as a band has been philosophically. We've had time to kind of bring to light and lay out on the table different ways, different routines, different possibilities, different ways to approach one's day. And without the incredibly hectic lifestyle of getting up and going to the next town so much over the year, where you don't really want to bog your brothers down too much with all that. You want to get to the next town safely and work together. Over these last few months, we've had time to really lay out on the table working on ourselves.
Oh, okay. Yeah, philosophically is the word you used. So interpersonal relationships, is that what you mean?
Bravery, courage, honesty, truthfulness, sincerity, beauty. This is another one that comes up all the time, Craig. Joy. Remember joy. What is joy? It's so easy, right? Show it to me then.
Uh-huh.
Show me what that is. Show me how well you perform joy. What is it about a person that makes them a joyful person?
Mm-hmm.
We certainly can identify what makes a person a shrewd asshole.
Well, carry me from the release of the album in 2018, the Santa Fe Channel, to those couple of years. What that record allowed y'all to do as a band that felt like growth, that felt like outreach, that felt like developing an audience, playing more widespread, because it was certainly where it felt like there was such a gap between the first project, and it galvanized what you all were doing, galvanized with that album. And carry me through that next year or so.
If I could just mirror or repeat in some way what you just said, that is it. Mm-hmm. Truly, I mean, you hit all of the bullet points, actually, because what else is there to say? I mean, it was an advertisement. It was a galvanization of what we had done and a little proof. That's why I always told my little brother, he wants to be a writer and a painter. He's very talented. Show me the painting, man.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Where's your book? Show it to me. Stop the thoughts of it. Show me the paper. It could be bad. It could be good. You could throw it off the side of the boat. But I need to see it and hold it. And so we were able to give you something that you could hold. And then all the skeptics or whoever wanted to be involved in or following bands like us or whatever, or our friends or our family, they could see, okay, well, there's that part. You know, they pitched the game. There's the stats. Mm-hmm. It happened.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to it occurring in one's mind.
Was there a venue, festival, vehicle that you saw and played for the first time during the 2018-2019 cycle that you'd want to tell me about?
Sure. I mean, I think Newport was cool because of the nostalgia. And, you know, but we're not nostalgic, man. We really treat them all the same. We thought that, you know, it's nice to have a major label put your stuff out and all these things going on. It allows the reach to be bigger, and you have longer arms to reach with.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to stay very focused on doing it and figuring out what's next, and just making sure that you're keeping going. So it wouldn't matter if you're on Columbia or Bolumbia. You should be able to keep going as a band, and all the results should be varied. But at the end of the day, they're not going to vary so much that your career is going to depend on how successful it was and some zeros.
When did you... So, I mean, with you guys, the process just fascinates me. The relentless rehearsal, the honing and polishing, also the fearlessness to toss out some passages, ideas, concepts that, as Toby said this in our prior interview, the rehearsal process is partly about leaving things behind too. And for folks who've not you know, either heard our first interview together or read about you. Talk about that process as a band, the rehearsal, and what you use that barn for.
Yeah, we try to get the false shell off. Anything that seems habitual or assumed, that's the level that we're at right now, because we found that we can arrange our songs, you know, legibly, and we feel like the arrangements aren't, too many things aren't blocking up on each other, and there's not, to put it into a simple way, like you don't see too many of the guitar players playing the same type of strumming in the same part of the neck. You've got that. You don't, so we're very pretty clear about how we perceive our arrangement. So then the next level is, okay, well then how do you extract and all the habit, right? Mm-hmm. How do you treat each musical moment like it's brand new? Well, how do you treat the moment taking your order at Bojangles as brand new? Because if you treat that person like they're just the Bojangles order taker, then you're going to remove all the specialness from it. And so that's what we've been training ourselves to do this year also, is to get past the music and really deal with what's difficult to talk about, because you can't, like Jerry says, at the end of the day, music is emotional.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Destiny Hotel began to take shape when and how?
The moment Santa Fe was going to come out.
Okay.
And so the next one took shape. I was standing right out there, Craig, and I got a call from our manager, and he said, Destiny Hotel's got a street date. And I punched in the air so hard that I threw my shoulder out of socket. That is the moment the next record starts. When you know that it's good, it could be coming out on Bob's records or Steve's records or her record, whatever. But when you know that you have, it's got to go out there, man. It has to. That's what we made it for. This is the, you know, if we would have done it for our room, then you and I wouldn't be talking about this. Mm-hmm.
But the writing process, the same kind of improv leads to structure, leads to, and then when, and talk about more about when the lyrics come in, because your records, for me, they do feel like musical experiences, but I have to remind myself, if I start to listen, there's some great writing in there, and I can't recall whether that's you exclusively on the lyrical side or how that goes.
It's all of us. First of all, you have to mention, I always mention our dear friend and family member and part of the family, Brian Wright, who's a big part of this. He helped me write This Town's a Drag, and he's got a few cuts that he was a major part on this one as well. And then you got Luca, who knows how to write songs like I'm the One That Needs You Tonight. This High Feeling song was one where we kind of, for the first time, kind of brought a few guys around and, you know, like, let's make something up, man. Yeah. You know, let's write a big song or something like that, you know, some Nashville thing that we really don't deal with too much. But back to that other point, the philosophy, the treating each other respectfully and kindly, the including each other, no matter if you got a little bit of 3 days full of resentment going, you got to include each other. Nothing of great value can be done on your own. And I try to believe that, I try to think that and then understand it and then do it. Mm-hmm. And so I involved Toby for the first time in a real way in the lyrical process. And who knew that his lyrics would be as beautiful as they became. And he has writing on High Feeling and Rain on the Rail and Destiny, just a magical, when you believe in the lies that you said and you can't tell the good from the bad. I said, dude, write me the simplest chorus that you can. Mm. And that's what he came back with. You can't tell the good.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, was Destiny and the two songs before it. The middle of the record is where I really fell in love. Afraid No More, Man in My Head, and Destiny. Just a fantastic sequence. It feels like Afraid No More thematically feels very key in the course of the album. I don't know. Is that...
I'm talking to the boys. I'm talking directly to them. That was where I got the source. You can't fear... the 10 minutes before the stage. Fear is nothing. Nervousness is beautiful. the actuality of recognizing your surroundings and going, this is a heavy moment. That's cool. Use that.
Yeah.
But you do not have to be afraid. And I remember when we started playing that song right when we had first read it, Craig, and we sung it in Knoxville at Barley's, and there was just a stranger out there, and they were singing almost all the words to a song that we didn't even have near finished yet. So I carried that with me.
Oh, cool.
And so then the next song, man, in my, so you're talking about, that's me, man. Those are my songs. That's me kind of, those are just kind of me and the arrangement of writing. Sometimes when I'm writing for three-part harmony, I try to make like the words like longer because it's easier to sing a harmony over a long note. Ah, everybody's got their note. If you're saying, hey, bam, 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 the good singers can do it. It's a little harder, right? Yeah. Man in my head is me putting down those kind of philosophies. And then again, incorporating Toby. We had got the fire going with Rain on the Rail, and I said, I got this man in my head, but I had just been sending this guy Joseph Campbell, and he's got his Eckhart Tolle book down there that I made these guys read. Oh. And Jens Peter Jacobsen, and so he wasn't like foreign this concept. He knew exactly what I was talking about. I was talking about the ego. And so he wrote that diabolical blee blee blur blee blee, like my mind is going crazy, and that man in my head is trying to talk to me, and he's trying to get me to do something for him. He's trying to keep him company because he's bored up there. And so that's the crux of the ego in that second guessing oneself. Wow. People said paranoia in a few interviews. Maybe it's more about that. Come on, man, that every one of us Westerners has that. And the difference between us and that muttering person on the bus is that it ain't coming out of our mouths.
Right. Yeah, I love that riff, and it's more than what one guitar is doing. It's there's this great little tension in
right.
there that's just
beautiful
sucks
word.
Me right in.
Yeah, so once again, the guys don't double. Weave would have made his part, and then Luca, of course, harmonized. And then when you get to that little flat, that third note of the sequence, that requires a little, that sweet, that's where that tension comes in, but it stays within the key.
I got this man in my head, trying to talk to me, trying to get me to do something for him, trying to keep him company. And every time I forget about him, he rear his ugly head. It's driving Loretta crazy. We ain't even sleeping in the same, sleeping in the same bed.
And then how does Destiny kind of create a payoff in that little sequence there?
There again, the same method as Rain on the Rail, where I believe I had the A minor. We're in the key of C now, so you'd play in the sixth chord. And I think I had A minor going. I said, Destiny, I feel like breaking free. You know, maybe I had that much, because I wanted to think of the simplest thing that I could move forward, the concept of destiny, but this destiny thing was a big part of what I was talking about. How do you know what you're going to go attack this Thursday night show with when you don't know your destiny? When you don't know what joy is, man. If you're going to not know what joy is, you better be able to be an open-hearted cat. So you got to pour some emotion out here. This is about emotion, not memory. That's what theater actors do. So we got to do emotion on the spot, and we got to deal with it. And so what is your destiny? And if you can kind of feel what that is each day, and every time you go into Bojangles, my destiny is to be me and to change these people's life and not to bother this person. But if there's something in her eyes that says, look at me clearly and let's have an exchange, even if it's for our 30 seconds of time together, then we got to do it. And that's my destiny. And so I said, destiny, I feel like breaking free. And so I sent that scrap poem, and Toby sends it back in the morning, and he says, destiny. But then he said, destiny again. And that's so ridiculous what I'm talking about right now, but to me that moved me so well that I thought that he felt that word deserved to be said twice.
Now what about this phrase Rain on the Rails from track number 2? That's a peculiar little image, and where does it come from? What struck you?
I've been paying attention to a lot of what of the people who are in our family and support us say about all these songs and stuff. This is the first time a record I've been able to talk like I feel like I'm telling the truth all the time. Before, by the time I got those records out, man, back in the day on Atlantic, those were baby songs. I felt like I was singing NSYNC songs, even though they were in the Americana style. I have never been able to talk as clearly about it as I've had. So I feel like every question I get now, I'm just like, man, I know exactly the answer to that.
Okay,
and that's
great.
Felt good on this record cycle. So sorry for me to make that anecdote.
That's fine. No, it's a good to be reminded that you've had this very intense and large chapter as an artist yourself against which all this can be compared, because that was as you described it to me before, wild, everything everybody would expect about an LA career, you know, in the midst of showbiz, and just a very different kind of deal than your Nashville, Tennessee domestic bliss.
Nobody did it like me. the way that I attacked Hollywood, the way that the gate was opened up, the door was opened up for me, and the way that I decided to blow a hole in the thing anyway, I think very few would have done it that way. And it made for good stories. And then you can sit up in your top porch in the middle of this, in these Nashville winters coming on, you know, when people like us are starting to get wanting to get near the beach, and then you see that rain start coming down and the darkness getting earlier, and then you do something as normal and as mundane as turn your head a certain way to look at trees that you've looked at thousands of times. Yeah. How can you see them as differently? What is different about this moment? And for some reason, I just said rain on the rail because there was rain dropping on the rail at that time. But for some reason, and it was a poetry lesson to myself, Craig, because I'm going, why does that mean loneliness? Why does that mean longing? I don't know why, but it did.
Okay.
And I heard one of our friends up in North Adams, he said, rain on the rail. It's raining tonight, and I can hear that train going by behind my house. And my ex-wife lives down at the end of it. And that's rain on the rail. And I always heard of the rail being where you run up to at the front of a big concert. That's the rail. Maybe your concert got rained out because... So I don't know, but... I like that, and I, of course, there's something, you're a writer, there's something about the way that the words are R-A-R-A.
Exactly, yeah.
Rain on the rail, breeze in the die, and I swear that I can't go.
So struck by this, you guys work so hard on honing your music, and both records have clocked in at just under 30 minutes, which is so interesting. Your concision is either something that just happened to happen two records in a row, or that you go for. What's the deal with that?
We're pretty concise in the studio. And so, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if there's going to be a big old jam session, it really, really better be significant. And, you know, man, we're not fools. We honor people that know how to improvise. And Bitches Brew and all those sections where that's a record. It's essentially live. That's not a lie. I mean, you're doing it in the studio. Yeah. You could have done it live in the night. So jazz is just so baffling that way and so tenacious. We don't feel like we're very strong in that. We're gonna dip our toes in that live because the occasion and our impression suits us better. We don't have to take those big risks because we're not pretending like we're Kamasi and Thundercat. We have concise recordings now. We don't treat any of the songs any more special than the other. All of the children are equal. You know, all of Lebowski's urban achievers are all equal. and we try to get input on, like, from you and our man. I probably sent you demos. Who knows, dude? I probably sent you demos on this record a long time ago.
And also going to Mexico is apparently part of the rehearsal process on this, as it's a big part of your lives.
Yeah, we just force it. It's just known that rehearsals at noon at the boys' beat at the boys' house, and we do it, and it's a part of it, and you don't, it's fun, and you just keep, man, I try to remember how excited I was when I had my first few bands in high school, and I was 16, and we were terrible, but you know what I mean, just when everybody kind of managed to hit on the same hit together, going into like a chorus, I just remember going, that's so good, man. That's so fun. And I just try to keep that with me all the time in rehearsal. Yeah, always play like that. That's what we do. And Mexico's beautiful.
Yeah, so you've been going down there, what, 6 or 7 years, maybe as many as 10 years now? How long?
I've been going 15 years.
15?
Yeah, but the boys have been going, yeah, like 5 years. I think Luke has probably been coming.
Right.
It's to where it's home for them, man. And we're trying to be super scientific and stuff this year, so we're not trying to force our way down and like put together shows. There's a lot of you know, people that are over 50 down there in our crew that come to our shows. We're going to do the smart thing, and it might be a year that we miss it.
That's doing the part like everybody else is. But it sounds like you are sort of consciously pursuing an intellectual and philosophical grounding. A lot of the reading you've alluded to, Joseph Campbell especially, is the one I'm most familiar with. Is there an actual philosophical tradition that you are specifically going after and mining that has a name or a lineage?
Sure, I call it, at least I found myself calling it in our Zen talks that I have with the boys, I call it following the line of good. Because what I found philosophically from Christ or Joseph Campbell or Bob Marley or Bob Dylan is that they are all rounding the same fire. They're all kind of sitting around at the same table, you know what I mean, and discussing the same themes. Goodness is what I've been able to make it come down to. When your mind tells you about goodness and you ignore it, that is what I call conscience. When you don't know any better, then how are you going to take any blame for it? You don't know. You don't know. And you don't know that you don't know. Now, when you know what the difference is and then you ignore it, that's bad conscience. But when you know what the difference is and you act on it, you're calling on yourself to live a different way, and it is a little bit more maybe exhausting. Maybe you're not the kind of person that wants to intervene in people's lives, or maybe you're not to be leaned on in that way. But if you want to be a real helper in this world, and the following the line of good is what I'm trying to do here. And even if you got to be tough with a bro, stay on that line of good and it won't matter. Even if they go away forever and never come back, stay on that line of good and it won't matter.
Mm-hmm. We were also talking about intentionality and attention and intensity. It's admirable. I need a dose of that myself. That's the hardest thing to maintain in a year when you're not around people as nearly as much, not feeding on physical contact and a hug and a touch and a laugh and all that. That's I feel that fading and that light's kind of dimming, you know. So.
Yeah, we're so very lucky to have the band family around. I'm so lucky to have we all live here, and it was meant to be that little village, and we intended on it that way. And so that if a calamity, if the dust storm came through town, that we were all just going to hold on to each other, and it was going to be all right. And I really do have a lot of sensitivity. If I were 21 or something in Hollywood in my little apartment, my God, I mean, what the hell would I be? Mm-hmm. How would I have handled this? I would have would I have been a disregarder of science because of my sheer need to go and be near people at that time? So we're very, very lucky to have this happen to us. We got a lot of love for anybody that's been affected, and we consider ourselves here for y'all, for everybody, man. We're trying to do our part.
Joe Firstman of Cordovas recorded October 30th, 2020. Their new album, Destiny Hotel, is out now. I'm Craig Havikers for WMOT. It's a fine life, fine as I ever know. I wake up in the morning, make a little coffee, shake and I cough, and I'm lost in my songs again.